Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, a show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is my co-host and wonderful friend, Spencer Doubting Thomas Williams.
How dare you? You can't put a cherry on top of that garbage.
We can always try. And speaking of which, trying...
Okay. Sorry.
Wow.
Brain heard garbage, and then the segue to me, and I was like, wait, what?
That's on you. I didn't put that anywhere. Anyway.
No, but he certainly did lean it all up.
Hey,
nicely.
Hey. Speaking of which, yeah, you heard her. Intern Amy is here. I can't even go.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. We got a great show in store as we are going to be reviewing one of the more recent films of the year 2024, and that is The Book of Clarence. So stick around as we dive into that, talk about a little bit of the theology behind it and the ideology as well. But before we do that, Spencer, give us them opening credits.
Tune in each and every Thursday.
Or some day of the week.
Or Friday.
Or whenever. It's a week.
We're getting there.
Yeah, it's on all your favorite streaming platforms.
And
over our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/philosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at philosophy101.
And Threads. Yes.
And Threads at some
I haven't put it in there, okay? I'll put it in there. Yes, we have a website. Head on over to philosophers.com where we have allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrillers, even conversations about society. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at philosophers.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's Google Play, iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audioboom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, or iHeart. You can tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Filmlosophers. Give us a follow or subscribe and listen in. Let us know how we're doing in the title section down below by giving us a comment. And if you're feeling so froggy, give us a 5-star review because we've earned that mess.
Yes, please.
Yes. We'll give you the social links at the end of the episode. So a lot has happened in the last couple of weeks. A lot of movie news and a lot of other things as well. Obviously, the world around us is burning slowly and surely, but that does not stop the ever-growing machine of the industry of Hollywood.
I mean, it will at one point because they'll be burned to death.
But then someone's going to have to record that, and that video will live in infamy.
Until everything
Hollywood! So,
I'm going to leave that alone. I wasn't going to... Anyway, moving forward with Hollywood-ish?
We got some movie news. Yeah, it's timed right.
Yeah, I was about to say, what's going on?
It's so delayed. I'm just getting to the point. I'm like, there it is.
Yeah, back to the topic at hand. We got some Hollywood movie news for you. And in that movie news category is the aforementioned, probably one of the biggest talked about things right now in Hollywood, which are the Academy Award nominations. They dropped, I believe, earlier this week or last week. I forget. It was early one morning. Andrew Garfield and someone else woke up really early and decided to read them off. I don't know. It's
why Andrew Garfield?
I don't know. He was just one of the people.
Okay.
It's funny. People have said that the most ironic thing about the Oscars is that it is the only award show that is performed in a mall, in a shopping mall. Because technically the Kodak Theater is
In the shopping mall.
Yeah.
It's right there.
It's funny. So the Oscar noms came out and a lot of people have a lot of opinions about things that are going on about those because of the fact that already established winners with other award shows such as Oppenheimer, The Holdovers, Barbie to some extent, Poor Things. A lot of these movies, Killers of the Flower Moon, a lot of these movies obviously came out and they swept. But there was some concerns because even though things like with Barbie, which was one of the best pictures of last year, obviously we talked about that at length, which it is on the docket for best picture. Mm-hmm. It is only in terms of for the performance side, it is only receiving nominations for best. Is it? It's not supporting actor, is he? Is he best actor?
I don't know. I know. I'm just Ken. This is up for song.
He's not under best actor. He's under best supporting.
So Ryan Gosling is under best supporting actor, and America Ferrera for best supporting actress.
Yes.
Which is really interesting because of the fact that number one, Margot Robbie didn't get nominated.
Nope.
Nor did Greta Gerwig for best director.
Which is very.
It is. It does raise a little bit of an eyebrow. I mean, you still got some of the recognition with, like we were saying, best picture. There was
two spaces for best original song, which was I'm Just Ken and then What Was I Made For? So
yeah. And mind you, there was a lot of other snubs, but okay. I don't want to start this conversation off with saying that there's snubs, because there's some concern around utilizing that word for the situation
there's
here.
There's choice exclusions, but even exclusion kind of sounds like snub.
No, I think that works. That works too. But there's a lot of conversation around this because of the fact that certain people weren't nominated and certain people were. And to be honest, I've thought about it for a little bit. I've given it some much. I take that back. I didn't think about it that much because honestly, it's one of those situations where everybody knows. And it's funny because as soon as I mentioned it before we went on the air, Spencer immediately was like, I don't care. Like, nobody cares. You know, hashtag Oscar so white, like every, which mind you, he literally said that. I'm not just making that a thing.
I did actually say that.
and the thing is, I'm surprised. I came to this conclusion. I'm surprised that people are still shocked that the Oscars are still doing this. Like, they've been doing it for years.
Yeah, and people are tired of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And yes, people are tired
Revolution!
Of it.
But march into that mall and tear it down.
It's an outside mall, so half of it's missing already.
Half your job's done.
But it's my thought is like, okay, yeah, they snub people. The reason why the word snub even exists is because this has happened before. I don't see, not that I'm saying that it's okay. I'm not saying that it's okay, but I'm also saying, what were we expecting? Like the Oscars
supposed to be celebrated?
Better.
True. Which
we were expecting better.
We've been expecting better, i.e. why there's even a hashtag for it, Oscars so white.
Yeah, well, why do you think I don't have to lower my standards and be like, I'm going to give up? No, I have expectations. And when you don't hit those expectations, I'm going to be like, you suck.
Very true. But
sorry.
I don't think a lot of these filmmakers are making movies just so that they can get the Oscar award. I mean, there's other awards out there, Golden Globes, Critics' Choice, BAFTAs, all these other ones that have a lot more, I guess, meaning behind them because there's a little bit more consideration. Although there was that scandal with the Hollywood Critics Association and I think it was the BAFTAs or the Critics.
It's probably Critics' Choice.
There's a lot of chaos going on in the South.
We leave the BAFTAs alone. They're fairly
self-contained. Aren't they British ones?
Yes. They're the British ones, which they're fine.
Well, there was also, what was it, Catherine Tate and David Tennant had come up to present an award, and Catherine Tate had been nominated 4 times and David Tennant has never been nominated and neither of them have won.
At that time, I'm pretty sure he's been nominated now.
Shall I Google?
I'm afraid to ask.
I will Google.
But my thought to you, my thought here is like, honestly, it would be nice to see progress, but it's like that racist uncle that we all have that we have to see sometimes during the holidays. And it's like, I'm hoping maybe he's gotten some kind of epiphany, but he's probably going to say the same, you know, racist joke that he usually says every year. And it's probably not going to go over well. So it's like, we can expect it, but I'm not going to be surprised if the other shoe doesn't drop.
No. Slap your uncle. That's what I have to say to you.
Why?
Because.
What's the point?
Nothing's going to change if it all's just like, well, let's see if they get a little revelation.
Yeah, you wait for the uncle to die and then you hope that his kids do better.
No, you murder the uncle and you plow forward.
I just said that.
And in good not murder news, David Tennant is hosting the BAFTAs this year. Oh. So, hey!
They're doing well over there.
They are.
We need to go back under the... No, never mind. We don't need to. I just... My thought is this. Is like, I get it. There are people who pick people. obviously every single award show has a committee and they choose who they want. And some people are blinded by money and by gifts and by campaigning. And others just see films for the way they are and judge them based on how well they are films, like how great a film they are. I have never once ever looked at the Oscars and said that is going to be a fair show, or that's going to be like, for the love of God, we were worried about Wish being on every single award show, and this is the one award show it's not on. But then they did this with like Greta Gerwig and Margot Robbie and all that, and it's like, we can't win. I mean, maybe that uncle comes to the holidays one day and he's broken his jaw and he can't talk. You know, sometimes you just wish for
a
broken jaw.
Really, really examine what you just said.
I'm
because
leaving it
it's
alone.
Depressing.
Like, it's, I mean, you're looking at me like it's not what's going on now. Like, Hollywood would be one thing if there was actual growth within the industry. We literally just spent months and months of people being out of work because the industry wanted to use AI to utilize their own faces in content that they should be getting paid for, mm-hmm. but now the industry wants to pay itself. Mm-hmm. So it's like, as much as I would love to see progress and movement on that part, I know that all I can control is what I see from the outside and what I can support from the outside. Mm-hmm. And if I see people on the outside making the change and making the work, I'm going to invest my time in that into them, as opposed to going and you know, praising Ryan Gosling for this, that, or the other because of whatever machine or whatnot is you know, being fed. It's me knowing that I can only control me. And with the Oscars, let's just face the facts. Their running track record is not good. After what, 50, 60 years, a quarter of those years having actual black actors receive their awards out of the back door, I'm good. You know, I would love to say progress, revolution, rah! Whatever Spencer's saying. But unfortunately, the fact of it is they're just not okay people. And the organization itself is not okay. It's not like people were wishing for, like, you know, heinous organizations to be like, but they'll get better. We got to wish for them to get. No, they just need to go away. They just need to die. They just need to be pushed aside and let's focus on the other ones.
Okay. No, I co-signed that message.
Thank you. I win. No, I'm not saying I win. Are you doing bills? Are we talking and we're boring you? No. Amy's got like a whole plethora of bills and
don't
envelopes
look at my mail.
In this whole
thing. That's a federal crime.
That is literally.
Federal crime.
We are literally in
who's
the middle of conversating.
To jail? Oscars and Eddie are looking at my mail.
You're the one who's showing it. She's over I'm here not. Taking pictures and she's writing things down.
Hey,
it's like if
hey,
I calculate this and I take it off my
don't
taxes.
Don't tell them
here,
about my taxes.
You're the one who's doing them right here at the table.
I have access.
Oh my gosh. Anyway, like, honestly, I would love to see organizations like this change and move and grow because we've seen others do it. But the track record just doesn't prove that that's any time soon.
Yeah, you're right. We should burn down the Oscars.
We should. I agree wholeheartedly.
Let's start a new one called the Boskers.
There you go. The Boskers. I will get behind that.
Please note that this is a...
The Boskers.
No, the intent to create the Boskers does not include any type of violence and or out.
I see that statue. I'm going to chop it in.
Against the Oscars or the...
We're going to wait for
the satirical podcast.
There we go. We're satirical now?
Yes. Oh. Effective right now.
Effective right now. Satirical.
Satirical.
It's in the description. Just look. I'll write it later.
Yeah.
All right.
It's fine.
Sure no intent to harm. No intent to harm or acts of violence.
No,
none.
I live way too far.
It's not.
I'm
worth
not
it.
Driving down LA traffic.
Yeah, it is a little chaotic. Not to mention they shut down that entire road for that day. So
yeah, and everything around it.
Well,
too.
Technically for the whole weekend because yep. They have to prepare the
and they have to put up the stands and everything else.
Speaking of satirical, that does bring us. Obviously, we'll keep closer eye on this, but that does bring us to our conversation of the evening as we discuss James Samuel's The Book of Clarence. This movie is one of those kind of surprise bangers that we decided to kind of step into and kind of engorge ourselves with in terms of watching. So before we move any forward, Spencer, give us that official synopsis goodness.
Streetwise but down on his luck, Clarence is struggling to find a better life for his family while fighting to free himself of debt. Captivated by the power and the glory of the rising Messiah and his apostles, he risks everything to carve his own path to a divine life. and ultimately discovers that the redemptive power of belief may be his only way out.
Written and directed and scored, mind you, by James Samuel, the film stars Lakeith Stanfield, Omar Sy, RJ Seiler, Anna Diop, David Oyelowo, Michael Ward, Alfre Woodard, Tiana Taylor, Caleb McLaughlin, Eric Kofi Abrifa, Marianne Jean-Baptiste, James McAvoy, and Benedict Cumberbatch. Mm-hmm. Now, this was a movie that, honestly, I was actually worried that we weren't going to be able to see because of the fact that it doesn't have a wide release. It does have a wide release, but it has a limited window.
It has a limited run.
This reminded me a lot of like when we went to go to the theaters to go see Blindspotting. Because we literally, Spencer and I and Chad at the time, went to like a 10 o'clock showing. Mm-hmm. And it was literally the last showing of the day, of the week, of its entire run.
Oh my gosh, really?
No joke.
Skin of our teeth.
Yeah. And we were like, we got to go see this movie. We're okay, let's go. Let's go try to find an early showing. And like, there's nothing showing. The only one that's open is 10 o'clock. And so we went there. And mind you, even after that one, like the impressiveness of that film had us talking outside of the theater for like a good 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But that's kind of along the same lines as this movie. This movie, I believe as of yesterday, it is no longer in theaters, or at least in our area here in Sacramento. I wasn't able to find another showing, and I know, Ames, you weren't able to really find another one as well.
It was through Cinemark.
So that might be different for AMC. Or...
But it was like three showings the entire day.
Oh, yeah.
Where?
I'm sorry. Godzilla minus one minus color. Feed finally. I was like, where
I'm
is
glad
this?
Spencer's hey, on.
I was looking
they
for.
They are up for one Oscar, and it is, I think it's only in it's
special
in
effects.
Special effects. And I'm like, they needed more too. Anyway, sorry.
Or
back.
Visual effects. I'm sorry. It's visual effects. So it was very interesting to first off see that this movie was on a limited run. And secondly, for it to not be showing on multiple actual theaters itself within the theater, because like Amy mentioned, there was only like three showings throughout the whole day, which means it was only running in one theater. But it's interesting because of the fact that there's not a lot of information about this movie out there. I've tried, and you hear me running in terms of like talking, because typically, I usually put like facts and information and trivia about the movie. There's nothing like this out there right now.
There's blank spots.
They're just three dots with no info, just periods. Because I'm like,
period.
So it's very interesting to see this movie come out and kind of get the raw reaction of a lot of people that I'm reading about how they felt about the film during their takes. Because obviously, nobody had prior information other than it's a satirical film about someone during the time of Jesus and so forth. Mm-hmm. So we are going to be talking about spoilers. I do want to jump into this with you guys, and again, your warning, this is your first and only and last warning. Spoiler alert, you have been warned. Let's talk expectations, and I want to start with Spencer, because I don't know if you brought it up or if I brought up this movie into the list, but I knew that I had wanted to see it, but I don't want to take away from the fact if you had brought it up.
No,
first.
It was you, definitely.
Okay.
It's like, I didn't really know anything about this movie.
Okay.
And I also think I didn't see the trailer for this movie before I went to see
it. I saw maybe one trailer, and it was a YouTube in-between ad. So it was like one of those like 30 seconds, and I'm like, that skip ad button looks really nice, and click.
So I came in with like very minimal knowledge. I think when we were assigning what we were doing for this month, I saw the brief description of it, and that was kind of it.
Yeah.
So I was kind of like, okay, I guess we're just finding out what this movie's about in the theater.
No, 100%. Amy, what were some of your expectations for this movie? First off, did you see a trailer?
I can't remember, and that might be a problem, because I did have this on my radar. But I don't know if I saw it in its entirety. And I saw Lakeith Stanfield and I was like...
Saw what, the trailer?
No, like I think I saw like a chunk of a trailer.
Oh, okay.
And saw him and I was like, oh, I want to see this. So expectations, I didn't know what to expect actually. And that was kind of nice.
Interesting. So I've had this movie on my radar for a little while. I've known that Lakeith Stanfield, because I follow him on social media, and he had been talking about, or not talking about, but he'd been posting about, you know, throughout the production, and not to mention that I really do like Lakeith Stanfield as an actor. I feel like everything that he's in usually packs a very important punch, whether if it's on the grand level of Get Out, it's on the absurd and yet still meaningful level of Sorry to Bother You, or it's on the Disney scale but emotionally like healing of The Haunted Mansion. He has just been somebody who consistently keeps showing that he is a growing and progressive actor. And I have to commend that. Like, knowing it's Lakeith Stanfield, I appreciate his works, and I appreciate his honesty, because he just seems like a very earnest person when he talks, either in interviews or when he's talking to people, or when he's, you know, doing stuff on socials, because he's really present on social media, on Instagram specifically. So knowing that he was going to be a part of this, and it was essentially kind of like a satirical, from the trailer, it looked like a satirical, like, I almost want to say like an Ocean's 11 kind of Jesus film. Like, you know, we're going to try to get money from the Messiah. It was like, and I'm like, all right, okay, you know, blasphemous maybe, but okay, I'm down. And yeah, my biggest just expectation was I knew he was going to do well. Like, I knew for a fact that it looked like he was having fun. It looked like something he had invested into. And yeah, I knew I wanted to go full boat into this. So we all saw the film. Mm-hmm. First thoughts, first impressions right outside the gate. Once we left the theater, movie has ended. Which, by the way, did anybody know if there was an end credit scene?
I didn't think there was.
Okay, I didn't stay either.
It was late and the lights immediately came up, so that usually is the tell. Like, for me, especially with Cinemark, they don't turn them on.
True, but they probably also don't really have a lot invested in this particular movie to know whether or not if there was or wasn't.
They're like, whatever, stay or leave.
They're like, oh, movie's over, whatever. So let's talk first impressions. Amy, I want to hear yours first.
This movie has a lot of things for me to think about, and overall I liked it, and I'm going to think on it. That was my first impression. I know, it doesn't give anything away.
No, it doesn't give anything
away.
So
I'm trying.
Good. Yeah, good job.
I'm working.
I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
Those HR classes have really helped.
Gosh darn it.
Spencer, what were some of your first impressions? Oh, wow.
Yeah, so like, like, I feel like what really tripped me up was like that last act of the movie, because, like, you know, I like this movie, but that last act really made me go, I'm sorry, wait, what? What's going, what? Like, I feel like this, your narrative flow is going one way, and then we've just made a turn, and it's very interesting.
We're going to have to circle back on that, because I'm actually interested in your thoughts. My first impression right out the gate, so I think it's safe to say, and I think we've mentioned it maybe before on this podcast, but we three come from a religious background. We are all, you know,
trauma babies.
I wasn't gonna say that, but
Spencer's laughing. Woo!
We've all come from church backgrounds, so we all have our level of you know, faith and in religion. So for me to watch this film and to kind of walk away with a unique kind of respect for the chance taken in this movie, whereas a lot of people probably are going to look at it and think blasphemy. Mm-hmm. I have to say, like, the movie made me actually not question my faith, but to dive deeper back into what I believed and what I thought, not to a level where it's like, you know, oh, all hail the almighty Lakeith, you know, or anything. However, it made me kind of just really rethink kind of what faith is to a certain extent. I think this movie gave me personally more questions about my past and my history than it did really pertaining to the movie. And mind you, I did get something out of the movie. I'm not saying I'm like totally egotistical. I'm like, oh, I didn't get diddly, but you know what? For myself, I'm just, you know, I'm great. No, the movie has a lot of very poignant points and very specific messaging that I actually appreciated. And so, you know, yeah, but let's dive in. Let's talk about some of the actors in this one. And obviously one of the main key ones is Lakeith Stanfield, who plays two different characters. Actually, he plays the Clarence character, the title character. And he also plays his twin brother, who is Thomas,
not
which
the
is
apostle. The apostle. I liked that joke. It was really dumb.
That's an inside joke. The in the movie, Clarence calls them apostles, which he gets corrected several times. But his twin brother, he also plays his twin brother, Thomas, who is the doubting Thomas of the 12 apostles. I have to admit, I really enjoyed watching this movie for what Lakeith brought to the table. I do think that he is still an outstanding actor, and I feel like he knows how to turn on strong emotion and relatability in an instant. Like, he can go from being somebody who's arrogant or egotistical to immediately somebody who you can see yourself in their shoes instantaneously. Mm. You know, and that's really difficult for an actor nowadays. I mean, you get a lot of people who do that in certain spots here or there, but they can't do it to where they flip-flop from both of those pretty regularly in one film. I don't know. What do you think, Spence?
You know, I really agreed with what you said earlier about Lakeith. We kind of just weren't worried about him because he just slaps it out of the park. I haven't seen him in anything I didn't like.
No, 100%.
And so, like, just as an actor, like, I think he's pretty phenomenal. And I kind of, like, always get, like, a little bit, you know, safer with a project when he just shows up in it. So, like, I think he's a pretty phenomenal actor, and he does a great job in this movie. Especially playing two different roles.
Very different roles.
Like personality-wise, very different from each other.
Yeah, and I can totally agree with everything you guys have said, because he actually plays against himself, and it is not only, like, palpable, but the difference, even in the way he expresses, is completely different. Which is really neat to see in that juxtaposition where he can pull from both sides of that coin. And when Thomas and Clarence have even quiet confrontations, and they're not even big confrontations, but they have those moments together, you see how he's very balanced as an actor, but never loses the rhythm or the beat of the scene that he's in. It was really nice.
You know, it's a really great example of that type of performance from him when he did, and I believe we reviewed it. I want to say reviewed. I don't know. When he starred in The Black Messiah.
Yeah, we reviewed that.
That movie, like, he was struggling, like, as the character, like,
yeah.
He played, so, Ames, I don't know if you've seen Black Messiah, but Lakeith Stanfield plays a black man who decides to work with the FBI as an informant to infiltrate the Black Panther organization, and ends up getting close to the leader, who he's a very influential man. I don't remember his name.
I don't remember either.
Played by Daniel Kaluuya.
Okay.
But he sees a lot of the work that Daniel Kaluuya's character and the rest of them are doing, and how they're trying to rebuild the community and whatnot. But the FBI see him as
Fred Hampton.
Huh?
Fred Hampton was who Daniel Kaluuya played.
But the FBI still see them as a terrorist organization. And the inner, like, battle that he has with believing in what's going on, but knowing that he's getting paid by the FBI to do this. And I think too, like, Spencer, I don't know if you recall, they had actual interviews of the actual man years after everything. And the same, like, inner struggle that man had in those real interviews, Lakeith had on point. Like, it was really good.
Okay.
So to state the obvious, yes, Lakeith Stanfield is an absolute gem. One of the things that I did want to also kind of highlight was how all-star packed this cast list is.
Yeah.
Everybody from Omar Sy to David Oyelowo to Michael Ward, Alfre Woodard, Caleb McLaughlin, a big surprise there.
Mm-hmm. He looked like an adult. I wasn't ready.
What was like his name? Lucas?
Dirty Zeke.
In this one, he's Dirty Zeke, but he's Lucas.
Yeah.
Lucas in Stranger Things. But I was just like, he got so much facial hair.
Yeah, I know.
I know someone stuck some of it on, but man.
I remember when he was at, like, out of side profile, I was like, that guy looks familiar. I can't figure out.
It took me a minute, too.
But once it was, like, straight at his face, I was like, Lucas, you grew facial hair.
And the bad thing was, I looked, I was like, oh, that's Caleb. Wait, what was the Stranger Things
name? I did the opposite. I was like, oh, that's Lucas. I went, wait, what's his actual name?
See, okay, then we need to hang out more, like, in the seats and be like, that's Caleb. You're like, no, that's Lucas. I was like, okay, we're both right. It's good.
But there was a lot of really great cast members in this film. Was there anybody you guys wanted to highlight?
Yeah. I would love, actually, to highlight Chase.
Did you just drop Love Actually?
No.
What? She just said, I would love, actually.
No, that was not intentional.
It's going to be a thing for the rest
of
this year.
But I'm. Yep. But we're not drinking. This is not a drinking game.
No.
I would like to bring up an actor that was a very delightful kind of surprise and kind of broke my heart, but was really nice to see. Chase Dillon, who played Cabbage the Gypsy. He's the kid that we saw in Haunted Mansion opposite.
Yeah.
He's in and out of the movie, but he has enough presence where we get to the third act and you see him and it kind of breaks your heart. But like, he's going to be one to watch. And I was really excited to see not only their camaraderie, but kind of like the give and take of Lakeith almost not just acknowledging that he's a good actor, but being like, this is my guy. Like you could see it on screen. Like there was just a general sense of camaraderie with the entire cast that was palpable. And I really liked that, but especially for Chase. Also, his name was Cabbage. Like, come on. You're a gypsy kid and your name's Cabbage. Like, is that an Avatar joke? Because if it is, I'm okay with
it.
Why
cabbages?
Well, and then you also get the fact that they've worked together before in Haunted Mansion. Mm-hmm. And so they already had, like, this camaraderie ahead of time.
Yeah.
So whatever they built during the course of the time of working together on that film, it just made it all the easier, especially, like you had mentioned, for them to kind of solidify how well they were going to work together in this film.
Yeah.
But they've also worked on other films too as well. Like they were both in The Harder They Fall, which is also a James Samuel film. Mm. So that's also, you know, a big plus on that one. I do have to say I'm not all too familiar with a lot of her work, but I still think she did a great job. Teyana Taylor, who played Mary Magdalene. Mm-hmm. I loved her performance. Her drive, her energy in the movie was just really great.
Oh, she was in Coming to America, too.
Who's that?
Teyana Taylor.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, she. I think, wasn't she the girl that was the other dictator's daughter or something?
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest. I completely put out of my mind that movie existed.
Oh, my God.
And no, just, not two.
No. I'm not making intentional puns.
This is already
today.
The second time she's done that.
No, I'm sorry. But it actually appears kind of like her IMDb is mostly music, which is actually really cool.
Well,
like,
it's, and she's it's also got a movie coming up as well, The 1001. That's supposed to be really interesting. I haven't seen really a lot of information on it, but I know that she's going to be in that one, which that's, I don't know if you guys recall, that's the one about her having a young son and her trying to make ends meet. And
oh, that's right. Yeah,
she looks, it looks like a really good movie. The design and the style of shooting was very interesting. Another just great actress and just all around veteran of the silver screen, Marianne Jean Baptiste. She played Amina. She played the mom to Clarence.
She was so sweet and beautiful. Yeah. Absolutely gorgeous.
She is always a dream to see on screen. I love her performance. Her playing Clarence's mom and to see her role, because she's not in the whole film. She's in maybe a few spots, mm-hmm. but she nails down that mother, not only a mother to Clarence, but a mother to all, kind of, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. you get that strong vibe and the mournful sorrows of Black mothers out there who have to deal with certain issues that happen during the day to day in the real world. I mean, she epitomizes that concern and that fear and that outcry very vividly in this movie. And I have to give them credit. Another person that I really thought was actually really fun. Where is he at? The other brother, RJ Seiler, who plays Elijah.
Yeah.
He is so great in this movie.
Wasn't he in Power Rangers?
He's Billy.
He's Billy, yeah.
I liked him.
He was also in The Harder They Fall as well. So obviously there's history there as well for, you know, James Samuel and again, Lakeith Stanfield and what's his name? Jace, the other little boy.
Dylan.
Chase Dylan.
Yeah. So it's great to see like their dynamic of Lakeith and him have a great just camaraderie as more than friends. Because for the longest time, I was like, wait, are they really brothers?
Yeah.
Are they just friends? And then you come to find out they're just friends, but they are pretty much brothers in this movie. Yeah. Pertaining to the relationship that they have with each other. He was just a great, you know, leveling out of like certain hard parts in the film. He kind of gave everybody the audience perspective on certain situations that happened. And it was just great. It was wonderful. Was there anybody else you guys saw that you wanted to highlight?
Spencer, you want to go first?
Yes, I'm going to highlight my Star Trek alums because
yes.
I will always point
do
to
it.
Yes, do it.
We'll start off with Alfre Woodard.
Yes.
She, like, let's just talk about
Mother
her for a second.
Mother Mary.
She brought big mom energy.
And she was so hilarious, too. Mm-hmm. It was such a great sequence, but I was like, yes, I love you so much.
Because she did a good job of like trying to keep Clarence in line while he was talking to her, and then also just like showing like the awe of that she is in of her own son.
Oh yeah, yeah,
like, so fantastic. And then the other person I'm going to point out is Babs Olusegun. I'm very
but I know he's from Discovery, right?
He's from Strange New World.
He's from Strange New World. Because he's one of the medics,
because
right?
Because he's the singing.
Yes,
he's, the
yeah.
sing.
Thank you. I win. Yeah, yeah.
It's not Star Trek month yet. You keep telling that.
Whatever.
Rude.
But like, I wasn't expecting him to just show up. And I was like, ah, Dr. Mbenga.
And he was great in this as well. I mean, he played a slave owner, you know, for Gladiators. And yet his arc, who he was in the film as like his, you know, occupation melted away as soon as that third act came into view. And it was like, yeah, he's great. He's a great actor. And I really appreciated his role in this movie. So, Ames.
Yes.
Well, you already
everyone
hit
else in the
everybody else. last one I really kind of want to bring up is Omar Sy. He played Barabbas, who was, what was he, Barabbas the Immortal?
Yeah.
So he was Bishop in X-Men Days of Future Past. That's the only reason I remember him. But this was so hilarious and such a turn about why he's explaining at one point why he's immortal. He's like, I've been stabbed here, I've been gut here, I've been ran through there. He's like, but they didn't get the right spot. And I was like, that little twist and kind of quip was such a great turn. But he has this just big, it's not even menacing energy. It's just power of presence. And when he has to face, Clarence faces off against him initially, he goes, you hit me unprovoked. And I'm like, I love you. Thank you for just being like, there's rules, sir. There's rules. And then for those about to die, we salute you, like, signal. I was just like, thank you. We're bringing up old, like, Spartacus and Gladiator stuff.
Swords and sandals.
All the swords and sandals.
And speaking of, like, during that time, like, Eric Kofi Abrifa, who played Jedediah the Terrible, I loved his role. Like, every good and great epic has that one warlord or one thug or one mob boss who just has a presence to uphold but has a heart. And Jedediah, the character Jedediah, was one of those that I just, at first I'm like, all right, okay, he's an enforcer, he's got his rules, he's got this. And again, when you come to that third act, and right before the third act comes into play, and you see like what he stands for. Again, this movie creates an equalizer of all people that suffer. under the same umbrella of, you know, from whatever the outside world sees them as to the afflicted instantaneously. Yeah. And that's only through the masterful workings of James Samuel, as a director and writer. So I wanted to make sure we didn't forget that. But did you have another one, Ames?
Well, the last one would have to be at that point. Then we're at Anya or Anna Diop. I think that's her name. She played Varinia. So Jedediah the Terrible's little sister. There was such a presence of softness and innocence and playfulness that was so well. Again, everybody had just great like interconnectivity and their chemistry across the board. Everybody meshed. Like even the guys that were the apostles. Like that energy was really fun too. But when we come to Varinia and Clarence, who is, of course, Varinia is little sister of Jedediah the Terrible, and Clarence is like,
he's enamored with her.
His crush, his straight up crush. The advice Clarence gets from his mother, which was really sweet, but then you see the actual impact of her as a person, and she is 100% not like pretending to be somebody else. It's just kind of natural, the ebb and flow of their interactions and how she carries herself, and her place within every scene she's in is never one of timid shyness or, oh hi, I'm here and I'm the sister. She carries presence and yeah. something, and it has such regality of it, but also such a feminine softness that I was like, ugh, girl, you just so good. Everybody
And I think that kind of brings us to where the story is, because I think on one footing, I think we all here can see from the perspective of, yes, there could be some level of people who say there may be a sense of blasphemy. I take that back. I don't really see.
It's because, okay, the story.
It's because it has Jesus in it. I think that's the only thing.
Okay, no, because like the literal actual story about what this movie is about is actually a blasphemous premise, and that's fine, though.
Yeah.
Because for some reason people are like, well, because that's blasphemous, the whole thing is bad. And I'm like, I don't buy into that, you know?
You know what the funny thing is that there are probably a ton of religious folk who are looking at this movie and they're like, oh my God, it's blasphemous and it's, you know, this and that. But the funny thing is, I'm pretty sure maybe 60 to 75% of those people don't realize that Jesus probably was black. Because, you know,
and if he wasn't, he was very dark to begin. Exactly. He was right up on top of
so
it.
It's like, I don't really get where this is probably more accurate than like the greatest story ever told movie or, you know, The Passion, because Jim Caviezel is white.
And he's very white, even when he tans.
And okay, even in this movie, with like watching all these Romans, I was like, man, these people must be getting like insane sunburns. Or just like, not to be rude, but
I know. I mean, the parts that are exposed. Plus,
they don't have sunscreen.
No,
they don't.
Yeah.
Oh, they really don't.
But the thing is, this story is not the story of Jesus. It is a story parallel to the story of Jesus.
Yeah.
And I think that's what a lot of people get confused. They're like, oh, well, yeah, you know, this is like. I think this movie does a very unique and almost expertly way of portraying both the story of Jesus, which is very minimal in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like he's not even, you don't even see him until almost like 30, 40 minutes into the movie.
But even then you don't really see him. Like, yeah. I think that was the thing that I started to appreciate, was that Jesus is there always living in the fringes of this story, and he is the whisper and the telling, and you don't get full Jesus until almost act three, like when you start getting into that last section, because when we first see him, you see him from a top down shot. Mm-hmm. You don't know who that is.
Well, like, yeah. And then there's like this blinding light behind him, so you don't see, because he has a hood covering over him. So you're like, okay, well, I'm assuming this is Jesus. But yeah, you don't actually see his face until he performs one of the recorded miracles in the Bible, which is, you know, stopping Mary Magdalene from getting stoned. And maybe there's a little bit of added flourishing with, you know, doing the Matrix thing by stopping the rocks.
I like Jesus having Jedi mind powers.
Hey. That was really nice. And also when he, you know, in the back to leg story, he turns the clay birds into bird birds when he claps his hands. I was like, I'm cool with that. That's cool. We go.
I don't think this movie is all that blasphemous to that story. Now, mind you, it does get more into the realm of going from a story about a messiah to a story about how people who are different are viewed by people who are put into places of power. And I think that's kind of the story that honestly rings true throughout all of human history. You know, I mean, we take a look at the world now. I mean, I'm not going to get into it because it's not really what we do. But I mean, we take a look at the situation going on with Israel and Palestine, and millions of people are like, you know, anti-Palestine because of whatever they are, whoever they are, or the things they've done. And yet they are ranging in the numbers of like hundreds of thousands of people who have lost their lives. And mind you, loss of life is always bad in any situation. It is never a good thing. However, we should stand for what we should, you know, stand for those who can't defend themselves, who need that help. And that goes to anybody. And this is one of those situations where in a very real world situation, people are experiencing this even now, today, where they are profiled. They are, you know, treated as lower class citizens, either because of the way they grew up, the color of their skin, where they're from, what side of town they live on. And mind you, that is literally everything that is touched upon in this movie. And I feel like this movie is more of a story about how nothing has changed in terms of the way those types of people who feel that way treat other people who have no right to be treated that way, you know. And take from it as you will. But yes, Clarence does go through the route of, you know, he does pretend to be a messiah because he wants to, you know, find a better way of living for him, his family, and everything like that. Ends up changing his whole heart about what he's doing, does something really great with what he's been given, and then is then crucified, both figuratively and literally, for doing something good in his own community. And that's literally every single situation that happens day to day now. And when the movie transitions over to that third act, then obviously we get a depiction of what a lot of us are aware of within the crucifixion story, where we don't see it, but Lakeith is beaten and then forced to carry his cross all the way up to the hill. And I think I was just talking, and we have a friend who's here at the studio as well. His name's Jack. And I was telling Jack, I was like, this movie is one of those types of movies where, if you recall when you were younger, I don't know if you had this, Spencer, but I know Amy's mentioned it before, where when the movie The Passion of the Christ came out, everybody went to the theaters, every person of faith went to the theaters, and it was an experience. Like, before you've read about the crucifixion, you've seen the movies that gently kind of touch on it.
Or you watched your Easter plays that just kept beating people as they carried their cross down the, you know...
Keep down going, the Via Dolorosa. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that I don't know. Spencer's looking at me like, I have no idea.
Oh, you are scared. Stay like, innocent, babe.
There was a song that was always played during Easter plays, when they were highlighting like the actual walk of, you know, Jesus with the cross to the place where he was going to get nailed to the cross. And there's a song that somebody decided to write and play. And
every church,
it's like
every
the path of the rose or the way of the rose or Via Dolorosa is like, I don't know. It's like the red road or something like that. I forget. But the song was always played. I'm pretty sure I'm triggering probably
a lot of
90% of the people who have been in the church and remember this. But it's always like, you know, the soldiers break into the back door of the church. Yelling. And start whipping at him, yelling, and then you hear the whole song like do 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 down the Via Dolorosa,
and then you slow procession up the middle while he's being beaten, and then they've got the squibs that are going off, and he's like screaming, and other people are.
This is brought to you by your local Christian church.
it's the little blood capsules, so it's the fake blood.
Oh,
sorry.
No, so wait, so wait, I don't. Wait, no, no, no,
whoa,
no, no,
whoa,
no, no,
whoa.
No, no, no. I don't. I'm know. So sorry. No, Amy probably went to some crazy rich white church. I went to a church where
there
they
were
just
a lot of white
they literally just like they because I was one of the soldiers for many years. They we would have a they would have us just like brush the whips in like red paint.
You were actually hitting somebody?
They were like they were like those really thin fabric like felt whips. Oh, so wow. When we would go by and we would like whip them, it would like leave a red smear. And so it was like it was always a thing. So mind you, back to my train of thought. So after years of doing that, like everybody was used to like those types of depictions. And then everybody saw The Passion of the Christ.
And
The Passion of the Christ, Mel Gibson in all his
Mel Gibson-ish
ways, decided that he wanted to depict the crucifixion in a more real and visceral way. And so he incorporated from according to what the Bible says, he incorporated the beating scene, like the whipping scene where Jesus was beaten with what's called a cat of nine tails, which is a whip that has nine ropes attached to it that have broken pieces of metal and barbed glass and stuff like that. He used that scene in there. And then the whole depiction of him being him going all the way up to the hill and, you know, being beaten still and then the nails and all that kind of stuff. So I say all that to say, that was probably the first time a lot of us saw how real the crucifixion really was through all the stories and all the readings and understandings that we had prior to this. Now, I say that to say this. This movie, it didn't do that for me. But what it did do was it put me in a different mindset to where the emotional connection for what we as minorities, because everybody here at this table is a minority, what we as minorities, when we choose to make those sacrifices and we are crucified or we are pushed down because of, you know, oh, well, you know, what do you know? You're black. You're not supposed to have this kind of success. Or what are you doing? You're Mexican. Your family's supposed to be picking whatever in the fields. Or you're Jewish. What do you know? And blah, blah, blah. Or you're a woman and you're, you know. And it took that moment and it reminded me that sometimes those inward emotions can be portrayed on screen. And this was a great way to see. Like Lakeith Stanfield, we have said it over and over. His acting in that scene alone made it so relatable, so visceral in the emotional sense, so connecting. Every single moment that occurred throughout that, whether if it was with that little boy, Cabbage, who tries to come and help him pick up the cross
and carry
and he pushes him aside to tell him, you know, go over there because the people were coming back with the whips, or to see his brother, his friend, Elijah, who was willing to pull out the sword and he tells him, no, Elijah, don't. And
Barabbas did the same thing.
And he honors him by giving him that signal that we who are about to die salute you signal. And as he's being carried away and you hear his mother cry out,
they always take
our babies. And immediately right there, it brought home this thing that we're in a system that just doesn't, it's not meant for us to win. We as minorities, we as people of color, we as genders who are not respected, we are in a system that is not made for us to succeed. And even if we make it to that, to the top of wherever we can be, even if we gain success, even if we are moved to the point to where we can help our communities, we are still crucified because we are who we are.
Well, and the other place you can see that kind of moment is when, before we get fully into the third act, Jedediah the Terrible has gone after Clarence. You think it's like this entire thing, Clarence is going to get beat up, and the Romans come to take Clarence away. And Jedediah puts down his foot and says, no, you can't take him. You can't take, and he's literally having face-to-face conversation with this white centurion. And it's a really good, like, this is our home. This is our people. And what are you afraid of? You're afraid of us. And, you know, that's what I know. And the centurion literally pulls out and.
Well, even before that, during the course of that, he goes, you're afraid because you're weak, because you know that we can be greater. that you know that if we rise up, and it's like, it's the perfect metaphor for where we are today. Like, honestly, we all are born, every person who is of a minority or a person who is born, you know, either a woman or someone who is of the LGBTQ, you know, lifestyle, or they're people who are discriminated against or oppressed. We are all like already imbued with a glass ceiling where if we get to that glass ceiling, all we're going to do is just hit our heads, you know, and it's already been imprinted upon us because of the fact that this system that we are born into is made for not for us.
Hmm. Which is what the centurion pushes home with making a threat where he says, well, that's what you know, but what I know, and he pulls out a sword, is that, and he says, you'll either Clarence will come peacefully or I will decapitate the head of your beloved sister. And nobody else is armed. Mm-mm. Like, Jedediah has two guys with him, but nobody has swords. Nobody has any type of weapon. It's literally only the Romans that do. And it's such a stark contrast where Jedediah like turns and is like, sorry, Clarence. And Clarence is like, no, I'll go. But you're literally in that space. And then Barabbas, who literally is just like, he wants to murder all the Romans. He's already given you his MO at the jump. That's what he wants. He wants revolution. But he's also not carrying a weapon, and he knocks down a Roman, and Clarence is screaming at him to run, just run. And you see him running, and the soldier that he knocks down, he's like, you see that? He's running towards me. He's charging me. You see it? And everybody's following them. It was such a moment where there's so many sequences in this where it's just a reminder that though there are people and minorities that are oppressed, the system has been designed that they can never win. And
even when they're right.
Yeah.
100%. Even when you have every bit of evidence to prove, they're literally looking at this guy who has thrown three spears at Barabbas and he is slumped over and they think he's dead. And Jedediah tells him, you think you can just walk away after killing one of us in cold blood? And the centurion turns around and goes, yep. And it's like, we have heard stories like this in the news. There are body cam footage of cops who are talking about how they've run over people and they're like, it's whatever. You see the way she bounced off the car? And it's like, you just killed somebody. And where is your humanity? You know? And it's a very powerful scene. It's a very powerful third act of this movie. Now, I do want to jump back. I know we're going from something meaningful to something that is probably going to be contrary to what I'm saying or what Amy's saying, because Spencer mentioned that when that third act comes in, you kind of were like, wait, what? So I need to hear this.
Okay. So I have to preface this. I understand the deeper meaning of the movie. Like, I want to put that out there. Yes. But
so he says.
But like, even when you have a deeper meaning, like, the meaning above that of the like story still has to flow. And I guess this is probably me just like, you know, trying to make sure I was paying attention to the movie and understand something.
Okay.
Maybe I missed something. But I guess I'm confused on what happened in like a following scene where Clarence is walking on water.
Yeah.
Because that's like, okay, visually, I was like, this is awesome. I really like this.
Yeah.
But story-wise, what, why, like, because like that was the thing I was like, why? Because like it comes across as God is bad at Clarence, that he was going around being a fake messiah, and he's like, oh, here's some real powers, bye, and like just like deals with it. And so like I feel like I'm missing the main point.
I don't think you're missing it, and I think that was part of that evolution of growth for Clarence. Mm-hmm. Because when we start in the first act, when you're book one, and all his goal is to become an apostle so that he can like get in, and then he wants he's not looking for glory, he's looking for, you know, to be able to make a better life.
Yes.
He gets rejected, and then he decides he's going to be the new Messiah.
Right.
But his entire time during that book section, you see where he has that confrontation with it himself. He's not comfortable being like, I am the new Messiah. Like, it takes so long, and he's having this like crisis of conscience, because what he knows and what he's chosen at this time is because Jesus has called his disciples to drop everything and follow him. And Clarence is still holding on to his mom being sick, and Thomas just up and left, like, poof, gone. And so he's struggling with that, which is part of this question of faith. And then, of course, we have Jesus who's on the outlying perimeter, and it's almost like he starts believing, but in small steps. And it's a little bit kind of hard to see how it's portrayed, because it doesn't seem like it's fully linear. Like, his growth is like, suddenly jumps and he has faith.
Well,
God is like, ha ha. So
I feel like a lot of that scene is more of, so the gospel of Clarence is in truth. It's in knowledge.
Yes.
Knowledge is stronger than belief, is his entire mountain.
And I feel like at this point in time with what he's been doing, I feel like the reason why he ends up walking on water is because he understands that knowledge is equal to the faith that you have. I mean, I don't know about you guys. I remember one time during my time when I was, you know, in the church, I heard someone speaking on a stage. It was at one of those Christian concert events and whatnot, and there was somebody
were
who was speaking.
In a tent?
Yeah,
there
were.
There we go.
And mind you, it was the last day. It was a Sunday, and they were doing a teaching, and some guy was up there, and he said something that really kind of spoke to me. He goes, "Faith is great." He goes, "But if you don't have logic, your faith is meaningless." He goes, if you are somebody who is there and you're looking at a chair and you can say, I believe this chair is going to hold me up. If you have no knowledge or logic of how the chair works, or that the chair only has two legs and it's about to fall, but you're going to sit on it and it's going to, then it's probably not going to work. He goes, but your logic is, this chair looks sound. This chair is something that I see. I understand how this chair works, to the degree that I'm not a carpenter, but I know how four legs can hold a person's weight. He goes, then my faith is then bolstered and understand that when I sit on it, logic tells me I'm going to sit into a chair. He goes, the understanding that faith without logic is blind following. The logic that we hold is what drives, it's what directs our faith. And I feel like in this scene, Clarence is at a point where he has realized that his logic, his knowledge that he's been preaching, everything about it has come full circle to understand that doing good deeds, doing good works, doesn't have to be just for a Messiah. It can be for anyone. And I feel like the idea of him walking is the fact that the society is now recognizing that, and he is now recognizing it as a sense of almost godhood, almost being a true quote-unquote Christian like Christ, to where he is now embodying everything that Jesus is already embodying while there. And that is why in that moment he is given that opportunity to walk. And even then, when you see people who nowadays who are just regular people, but they then surpass the logic of regular men and women who don't understand why racism is wrong, or why discrimination is not okay, or why women are just as equal as men, or that other people from other countries deserve just as many opportunities as anyone else does. And you find the logic in the faith that these are the things that ring true, you become something more. You become a threat to the uneducated. And when you become a threat to the uneducated, what is the most primitive thing that uneducated people want to do? They want to hurt and destroy and kill. And I think that's what that was highlighting for me personally.
I actually think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And I mean, the other thing I was thinking too, if we took it purely from a Christianese idea, it's somebody interceded. Like my mother would strongly say, well, someone was praying for him. That's why he walked on water, because someone prayed for him and said, God, give Clarence a miracle. Don't let him die. And God's like, cool, I'm going to let him walk on water. Well, and I think that highlights where this story and this movie stands in the space of being, it's not completely blasphemous enough, and it's not completely satirical enough to be like either one, strongly in either column. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that is such a great space to live in, where you're simultaneously between like Ten Commandments and Monty Python's Life of Brian. Like, you're living in that space in such an organic way that it creates conversation where we can have this dialogue and we're like, even when we get Clarence is brought before Pilate and he goes, I'm not he. And then Clarence just lays it out. He's like, I'm not a Messiah. And everybody's cheering around him that he is the Messiah. And it's like,
and I think that's another part of that too. Yeah. Like, because you get that instance where he says, you know, I'm he who, and but the thing is, when he lays it out, he's just stating, I'm just trying to do better. I'm trying to make a better way. Sometimes it's not always the best way. Sometimes we try to make inroads for possibilities for another meal on the table, and we don't do it in the most savvy or the most, you know, logical of ways, but we make efforts. And I think that's him even laying it out still solidifies he's being honest. He's being real. But I think also the scene that happens after that, when after he does the walk on water scene and he ends up in a cell and his brother shows up and he goes, I didn't know you believed in God. And he turns to him and says, I don't believe, I know.
Yeah. And he said, how did you do it? And he says, yeah. And he goes, I thought you didn't believe in God. And he said, I thought you didn't believe in God. He said, I don't believe, but I know it was him. I know it was God.
He says, I don't believe it was God. I know it was God. You know, and it's that logic and faith that so many people misconstrue. And the thing is that you don't, even nowadays, you don't have to believe in a creator. You don't have to believe in an almighty, powerful deity. You don't have to have those to be faithful, to be, you know, to have faith. You can just believe in what is good in the world and what is good in humanity. And you can believe that there is a possibility of that ceiling being removed, to break through that ceiling. And that is enough to believe, to know that your belief in breaking through that ceiling can sometimes be the difference between us living in squalor and living in a better means, because we've chosen to do more than what was expected of us. And I think that's what exactly Clarence is highlighting in that scene. And I think it's that perfect round circle of a period that is perfectly made, is dotted as soon as he says that line. He goes, I don't believe in God. I know it was God. And I felt like that was such a profound statement to make. That whole scene was just so profound. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Fun.
No, I agree.
I do have a thought about kind of where we're gonna go in the next part, but I want to get your guys' thoughts on any highlights or issues you had with the film.
Ooh.
Let's go ahead and start with Spencer, because he looks like he's really thinking.
Yeah, I am really thinking.
I know you're really thinking.
Spencer
usually
thinks all the time. Well,
no, usually he has one in mind after we've been talking for something. He goes, nope, I got one. And I'm like, oh, okay, let's go. But you really look like you were digging deep there.
Yeah. I'm going to highlight this because it's a joke and it just makes me laugh for no good reason. There's a dance scene, right? And like, I love that whole dance scene. I thought it was great. I like the music. It's all great. But when they go outside, like, you can still hear the music like it's a club. I'm like, what? True. I was like, what is this nonsense? Like, this movie actually has like some good, like, low-key jokes like that.
Yeah. So
there's like lots of little things like that I really appreciate in the movie.
Yeah. I've got a couple, which it's easier to find highlights in this for me than really issues. Like, mm-hmm. And I think that is such a great nod to the director, writer,
composer.
He's got all of them. The Benjamin the Beggar, AKA Benedict Cumberbatch, who has a magical transformation after an encounter with Jesus, mm-hmm. where he turns into white Jesus. That joke. When he goes to essentially a salon, he gets taken care of, and the women go, he looks just like Jesus. After at this point, we've seen Jesus. He doesn't look Jesus.
And which the other hairdressers are like, but you've never seen Jesus. I don't know, but he looks like him. He just looks
like
a Messiah.
He's white. He looks like we could trust him. And I was just like, oh my God. gosh, which was hilarious. And then you get Benedict Cumberbatch, who was in such small space that it was, I'm not going to be like, oh, I need a lot of Benedict Cumberbatch. It was just enough everywhere.
Yeah.
But he's tossing his like curly blonde
the hair
in.
Toss.
Yes.
Like every time.
And it was, oh, it was.
Which we didn't really get to highlight, but Benedict Cumberbatch being in this movie.
On the low, too.
Yeah. So like, it was nowhere in the trailers. I didn't even see, again, I didn't do a lot of research on this film, but I had no idea. And the fact that he was in this movie to play this role was such a surprise and a delight, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that was such a highlight. The end of Act 3 when we do get to the crucifixion in simultaneous the conversation that that happens between crucified Clarence and the other I don't want to spoil it where Clarence says Father or Lord forgive them for they know not what they do, and then the guy on the next cross next to him goes out. He goes, oh, you're praying to them, God kill them all, fire, brimstone, possibly
he goes, you want a prayer for these people, here's a prayer, God kill them all.
And he's like, with lava. And I was just like, the juxtaposition that is so great too. And also the costumes were really well done, and it wasn't like crazy drastic or like everyone's entirely poor. There was a great amount of textiles like everywhere. Everything was like, I wanted to reach out and touch everything, which was great. Also, it was filmed in Italy, and I'm like, I was like, okay, Italy, let's.
Some in Italy, some in Israel, actually, too.
Oh,
it was in both places. That was the one little bit of information that I was able to get out of this movie, that it wasn't filmed in those two places. So.
Yeah, and I think we just have to talk
about
score.
Are you going
to
take everybody's, or are you going to let? Okay,
I just say
Spencer,
score.
Go ahead before she takes everything.
I just said one. You should say one at this point.
Yeah.
What did you say?
I said the jokes.
Oh.
Clearly someone wasn't listening when I was talking.
Because I asked her to go first.
No, you didn't.
You asked me to go first.
Oh, my bad then.
You're not even listening to yourself.
I'm producing and listening, okay?
You spoke.
It's a juggle. Oh, anyway, okay. I really do.
Watch him give my highlight.
Yeah.
The jokes were just absolutely, no. I felt like every intention in this movie that was written out pertaining to like the solidifying of relationships or the defining of lines pertaining to inner struggle and true progress was really well defined. I felt like the mini vignettes that we had with Judas and even the scene where they all pause for the one notable scene of, you know, the Last Supper, and the way Judas is having that inner turmoil conversation about, because everybody always pits Judas as like, oh, he was always evil. He was planning this. But creating that kind of dichotomy of someone's thought process where they don't want to actually be a horrible person. However, there's just certain things within them that fight against that, because kind of like that age old story, you know, everybody has two wolves within them fighting, you know, one good, one evil, fighting each other inside, whatever.
Who do you feed
the most? And I felt like this was one of those scenes, and I really like that. Every person who was one particular, you know, brand of bad throughout this movie, and I don't want to say evil, I mean bad, like, you know, whether or not they were dealing drugs or they were, you know, doing whatever or being a mob boss. Like, I love the fact that the recognition that, you know, people come from all parts, but in the end, when people are afflicted, they're all afflicted, and it's a community that comes together to fight against that. I felt like that was a great message to really bring home at the beginning of that third act, and then to just recognize it all the way through. Like, it was just such a good, well-written movie. I feel like I have to go and revisit all the other James Samuel movies that he's done prior to this. Because
The Harder They Fall, right? Or did you do one before that?
I believe there was one other one.
I don't know.
Have you checked?
No, of course not. I haven't checked. I don't have a laptop in front of me. I just get in trouble for doing bills and taxes.
The Harder They Fall, They Die by Dawn. Oh, he was a producer on that one. Let's see. He's done four. The Book of Clarence, The Harder They Fall, and They Die by Dawn.
Which he was a producer, but he didn't direct.
He directed it.
Yeah, he directed it. Oh.
Well, I guess I have another one to watch.
Yep, you do.
Yay.
Which has Rosario Dawson and Giancarlo Esposito in it.
Ooh.
So, but yeah, I felt like there was so much of real world situations brought into this movie, scenarios to create a very meaningful message that I think any person who has ever struggled with affliction or oppression or discrimination can definitely see and get behind. But that does bring me to the roundtable question. And so I don't know if you guys recall, and again, spoiler alert, whatever. At the very end of the film, after Clarence is crucified and he's died, Jesus comes by his tomb, breaks the rock that's in front of it, and then raises him back to life. Now, as he's risen back to life, he is then given, or he then has a light bulb above his head, which
it's
is...
It's a lit urn. It's not a light bulb.
Oh, is it a lit urn?
It looks like basically an upturned pot, so it looks almost like an urn.
Isn't that what a light bulb is?
Essentially. But he doesn't know that.
Thank you, Spencer.
He doesn't know that.
So my question is, what do you think was that final thought light bulb that Clarence had at the end of the film?
Easy enough. Jesus is still alive. Like, that's, I think that's something that we consistently see across the board. Because the centurion, when they take Clarence, they're like, listen, there's a whole bunch of messiahs going around. We just need to snuff this out immediately. Life of Brian even makes that kind of joke with, it was like, the people's resistance of Judea or something like that. Like, they're revolutionary. So they're trying to quell this, and Clarence acting as a messiah. It also hits in this juxtaposition of Clarence's, crucified 3 days before Jesus, and Jesus lets his disciples know he's going to be, you know, crucified in 3 days. He's going to be taken and crucified, and raising Clarence from the dead is kind of like that way. If you're going to keep the story going, and you can spread it that way, because it's like, I, that's what I thought, but there's like so many spaces to have it. But I don't know, Spencer.
What about you, Spence?
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm like, Spencer, say something to inspire me. Come on.
Yeah. See, like, I mean, I guess that's kind of where you are just left with, is that, like, where Clarence is in this part of the movie is that, like, you know, he's just been inspired. So, like, I feel like he's going to go out there and he's going to, like, I don't want to say rally the troops, but I feel like he's going to start spreading a message of, like, educating people that they can, like, help themselves, mm-hmm. and that will, like, lead them to God type thing. That's what I would get from, like, yeah. where Clarence is in this journey. What about you, Ed?
Oh, boy. I didn't formulate something fast enough. So my thought is, because he looks down at his hands and he sees the holes in his hands.
They're getting healed.
Yes.
Are they getting healed?
Yes.
So I he sees this, and I feel like the thought is that sometimes even oppression isn't enough to keep us down. And I feel like the thought bubble is that he can go back out there and keep doing it and keep pushing forward and learn from before and still try to make the world a little bit better. Because, yeah, Jesus comes and he heals him, and he comes up and he sees his hands and he sees, and they're getting healed, and the thought bubble is just, it just happens there, and then the movie cuts and it's ended.
But Jesus also tells him, you know, now you know I am the resurrection, the way, and the life, or something like that,
mm-hmm.
to Clarence, and Clarence doesn't, like, literally Clarence sits up and he says, my Lord, and Jesus says that to him, and then Jesus, like, just walks away, and you're like, okay, Jesus. Okay. Yeah.
And I feel like it's more of the thought that even death can't keep the progress of man or the progress of a faith, whether if it's a faith in your community or a faith in the beliefs that you have that all men are created equal, that even death can't keep it buried. And I feel like that last bubble is him realizing that, and with coupled with everything that he's seen and done and experienced. And I feel like that's kind of the drive to keep pushing forward. But I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if it was like, oh, you know, he just thought, hey, I'm back to life and I could probably do another couple of, you know, tricks here or there and get some more money. Like, I don't know if that's probably what.
Nah.
He's learned too much.
He's changed. And I think that's part of this journey that's really great to see, even if people don't. It needs a second watch. Like, that's something.
I agree.
I really like how a lot of these movies we've been watching so far require second watches.
Right?
Oh, my God.
I like yeah. it. Let's support you guys. Let's get some more money into them pockets.
Let's take it away from the Oscars.
yeah.
So, wrap
it down. Satire.
Boskers.
Hashtag Boskers.
Hashtag Boskers. Wrapping this thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table and talk about whether the film passes or fails and how many monocles. Let's start with Amy.
So, of course, this film passes for me.
Of course,
if you haven't heard us gushing about it. There is a moment that I want to highlight that I didn't get to really fast in me giving my monocles. When Clarence comes to his mother, she is talking to him and she reminds him to be the body and not the shadow and to hold space. And this entire film, when you start thinking about that, when we move up to the end and to the
hold space. Sorry.
Hold space.
Because I remember he repeats it back to her.
He tells her to hold space. Yeah. There is a progression of a man who is moving through being a shadow to becoming a body. And he is continuing to hold space. And at the end of this, what you truly see is somebody who is a body, who isn't just ghosting through life or moving through it without impacting people. And that choice is something that not only Clarence makes, but I think is such a great message to continue to strive for everybody. So this movie gets a 4.8 out of 5 monocles for me.
Wow.
I really enjoyed it. I am happy to watch it again.
Spencer, this that's more than she gave for American Fiction.
Wow.
Man, really? It was?
What? Right. She gave it a.
It's probably because they killed off Chase Elliott Ross.
Yes, it was.
And then okay, so you gave it a 4.8.
4.8 out of 5 monocles. Again, another one starting off really strong this year. Like, give
this
me more.
This is January. This is not normal.
Well, no. I mean, and I was thinking about this the other day. We've hit some points where January had some of the most strongest films that we've covered. And then it's like, why are these in January? Like when we did that one year where it was Ma Rainey's Black Bottom and One Night in Miami.
Yeah, that was a strong one, too.
That was a very strong one. I'm like, why is this in January? And why is this on Amazon Prime? So
really the biggest crime.
Spencer.
I'm not paying that tax. Just so you know, Amazon. okay, so for me, I came in with like no expectations, left entertained and slightly bewildered by a certain little points in the movie, but I still had a fantastic time. Like honestly, I feel like I was just really stunned. Like this movie stunned me for like a good day after watching it because I was like,
did I miss something?
No, yeah. Part of it was that. I was like, wait. Once I find it, it's like, no, you didn't. And it was able to like shuffle in.
Spencer, what you missed is that Professor Xavier was, you know, using his mind to keep him out of the...
I knew we couldn't trust him. All these psychic professors.
The Disney universe is coming to the Bible, man.
I wouldn't have let you drown, but now I have to crucify
the Bible, brought to you by Disney.
There you go.
No, honestly, like this movie is just really well done. Like fantastic soundtrack. Why are you laughing at me?
Oh my God, I am now thinking if Disney did a Bible movie and Mickey would play Jesus. Ha ha.
No. No.
Father, forgive them.
Oh my gosh. Spencer, keep going.
Blasphemous indeed.
Okay. So anyway, now that we have to think about Jesus Mickey, I think that this was just really a fantastic movie. And yeah. I feel like more people need to be a bit open-minded when seeing a movie. Because yeah, there are some movies that are just like out there to be offensive. But then there's movies like this where if you look below the surface, you will find a lot to really dive into. Yeah. And you're going to be missing out on something really fantastic if you don't just like check things out. So for me, this is a 4.5 out of 5.
Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah, it's really strange because, like, you look at the history of cinema, there are bigger fish to fry. Like, if you want to go out there and call out a blasphemous movie, go find a real blasphemous movie and then call it out for that. This isn't anything near close to some movies that have already been out and that have been that have received banned accolades for what they are. And it's like, come on.
Monty Python and the Life of Brian, just a brief side note, they enjoyed that they got banned in Norway because they were blasphemous and they used it in their marketing. If you want to talk about blasphemy and satirical, hey, Pythons.
Honestly, that's a really good thing to put in your advertising. Yeah. We're banned in Norway.
It was literally so funny. We're banned in Norway. Sorry. Yeah. Keep going.
Yeah. The film passes for me. It's definitely a great story. James Samuel has really got a finger on the pulse of creating stories that incite conversation like this and really should be more delved into by a lot of critics rather than just look at the surface of what they see. Because honestly, when you go past the generic Jesus story that it does have on the lower level of what it actually holds, it's a great story about the afflicted community that is still to this day feeling the same, you know, pressure and prejudice and discrimination that it did long ago. In terms of monocles, I'm going to give this movie a 4.5 as well. This movie was really great. I loved every aspect of the character buildup, the story progression. I loved every single person that was in this movie. There was not one person who I didn't really like who was of consequence, not just any random person, but any person who was actually of consequence. I really appreciated their performance in this movie. And I really feel like if we can look past a lot of the own personal prejudices that we carry when it comes to seeing movies like this, we could actually find great messages in film today that are really meant for the world to hear. So film receives a 4.5 from me, and yeah. So, yeah.
Yay!
Yeah! Yeah! But
this was an interesting one to tackle, but I like it.
Well, that about wraps up another episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out over at our website at filmlosophers.com. There we got episodes talking about movies like this or the more lighthearted, like, you know, rom-coms and stuff like that. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosophers.com. Not but dot, but dot com.
But dot.
Filmlosophers.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's Google Play, Libsyn, iTunes, Player FM, Audioboom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, or iHeart. You can tune into your heart's desire on any of those platforms. Look for us there at The Filmlosophers. Give us a follow or a subscribe and listen in. Let us know how we're doing. Check out our latest episode where last week, lesson 382, we talked about American Fiction the wonderful performances by Jeffrey Wright and Sterling K. Brown, among others.
Who are up for Oscars?
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Whatever.
It works.
Check us out over on our website or at those places on those platforms. Follow us at The Film Lospers and let us know what you think. Give us a comment in the towel section down below and we'd love to hear your thoughts. Also, if you think they're good episodes, give us a 5-star review because we have earned that.
We have.
It's been a long time coming. Demand. We can't burn it down. It's
the
terrible.
Intern is making demands. I don't know. Spencer and I are going to, once we get off the air, we're going to go start plotting our assassination attempt satirically of the Oscars.
No, I have no idea what you're talking about. Hashtag Boskers.
Speaking of Boskers, you can also check us out over on the socials at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at Filmlosophy101. There you can check out all of our great contents and as well as our other stuff, including Spencer's Big Score and Amy's Jane on Scene, which can be found where?
The only place it's ever lived, which is at Jane Unseen on Instagram and Instagram only. And the most recent post actually is Sorry to Bother You with Lakeith Stanfield. That works great. Yep. But I also saw the A-Team movie, so I'm confused.
We'll cross that road when we get there.
Or run it over with our... anyway, sorry, go, help.
Well, again, that wraps up our episode. So, from all of us here at The Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Still intern Amy.
Class dismissed.